is Soft Tattoo Millionaires, the Winamp to your iTunes podcast. I'm your host, Max, along with my brother, Jack. How are you doing, Jack?
I'm good. It was a win for both of our teams this morning. So
yes, man. It was a very good day. We're rooting for Portsmouth in some cup that has a name that I do not know.
Checkatrade. Today was the lowest. Yeah, I know. It was the lowest attendance ever for a Portsmouth game with something like 1,400 fans. But that's why you wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, lower league cup. Super exciting stuff. I remember watching in the off season when Southampton made that video vilifying Ronald Koeman trying to steal the Southampton secret ingredient. I forget what they're called or something like that, like sort of like the secret sauce that they have. And there was, if you guys haven't seen it, it's like a cartoon video where like a figure who looks a lot like Ronald Koeman and has a very conspicuous Dutch accent is trying to lead a group of supervillains to steal them and to steal this secret sauce from Southampton. And so it's all these like Premier League teams that are vilified or whatever. But then also sitting at the table of villains is Portsmouth.
Yeah, and it's our biggest rivals.
I know, and it's funny. It's like because it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You used to literally have a seat at the table, and now you just have a cartoon.
No, I've never even met another Portsmouth fan. I have traveled a lot, and especially abroad when I meet, you know, British people out in, when I used to stay at hostels, I would always ask them who their team was. I have met so many Southampton fans. In grad school, I had to do a research fellowship for this writer who was also a Southampton fan. So for 6 months, every time I would present him research, he would also rub it in my face that Portsmouth had gone bankrupt 3 times in 3 years. The first time I ever meet a Portsmouth fan, I'm going to cry.
You know, I mean, it's dire straits when Southampton gets to lord things over you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Oh, boy.
All right, well, moving on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had a good soccer morning, and
yes. Each of you said that your team is Everton.
Yeah,
they won 2-0 against Huddersfield.
Yeah, and while we're talking about that, one relevant thing for U.S. soccer was that obviously Danny Williams plays in the midfield for Huddersfield Town. So I got to watch him play for 90 minutes, which was great. He's an interesting player. He's really a really defensive midfielder from what I was seeing, and he made a number of nice plays in the course of the game, one potentially goal saving tackle. He just seems like a very stout midfielder who is very good at marking men, not getting rolled, just kind of being that last line of defense. And in fact, probably right around the 70th minute, Wagner changed tactics and moved Danny Williams into a back three. So that was a really interesting thing, just to kind of see that he had this versatility and would even move into a back three. But yeah, he played well. Obviously, Huddersfield Town lost, much to my pleasure. But nice to see Danny Williams. Looks like not, you know, like a superstar or anything like that. Obviously, if he's, you know, like a defensive midfielder for, you know, Huddersfield Town, he's not going to be a superstar. But another solid option for the men's team.
Yeah, defensive midfielder for Huddersfield Town is something that a lot of U.S. men's national teams fans can get very excited about. As opposed to, like, third-string striker on the San Jose Quakes or something like that.
Yeah.
Not to shit on San Jose, but quality in EPL.
No, yeah, vastly higher. He looked quality, but he looked like a non-flashy kind of quality. He looked
perfect.
Yeah, so that was good to see. Then again, playing defensive midfield against Everton can make you look like a solid, stout defender. so maybe it wasn't the best environment.
Yeah,
but let's talk some American soccer. So, yes. We want to talk expansion teams. So, what are you thinking about these four expansion teams that we're looking at here? Detroit, Sacramento, Nashville, Cincinnati, four potential expansion teams. What are your
Well, I'd also say that is the order from least likely to most likely.
Yeah.
I think. So Detroit is backed by Dan Gilbert, owner of the Cavs, and Tom Gores, who owns the Pistons. The Ford family are also involved. Originally, they said they were going to build a soccer-specific stadium, but now they want to use the Lions Field in a kind of Atlanta United, Atlanta Falcons relationship kind of way.
Yeah.
But, and this has displeased the MLS. They have stressed the importance for soccer-specific stadiums. So I would say that this is the least likely deal, but we'll see. MLS makes a lot of decisions that are good for money and not great for soccer. And this would be something that would be really good for money. Dan Gilbert, Tom Gores, and the Ford family have deep pockets.
And it's a big, it's you know, granted Detroit's like a kind of declining metropolitan area, but still a relatively large media market and a larger media market than some other names on this list. So you can see the potential there. It's got, you know, as a city, Detroit obviously also has like a media and other infrastructure for sports fandom. So as dumb as that sounds, like the fact that, hey, all of that Detroit has all kinds of different newspapers and websites that are all dedicated to Detroit sports blogging. You know, that's an important part of expansion. It's so much easier for these folks to just kind of like add some discussion to Detroit than it is, I would guess, for someone like Sacramento. But maybe Sacramento, you know, is a decent market. But let's talk about them. What are your thoughts on Sacramento as a destination?
Really good. Yeah, it's a really good USL team right now. They average 11,500 people per game, which is great. They already have an academy for their USL team. They are the 20th largest market in the United States, and they already have an MLS jersey sponsor done if they make it there. Mm-hmm. So the only drawback from the MLS standpoint is that the current owner, Kevin Nagel, doesn't have as much money as, say, Dan Gilbert or Tom Gores. He needs to find more funding. He needs to find more backing for his team. But Sacramento, I think, would be a great, great MLS market.
Okay, counter argument. Doesn't Sacramento as a market smack a little bit of Columbus in the making?
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Where it's like, I mean, I'm really skeptical of MLS, and it seems to me that like if MLS's MO is to get soccer specific stadiums in large media market cities, it's going after Sacramento. Is it using sort of Sacramento and these other markets as kind of like, I don't know, leverage points? So that, in other words, if it's saying like, hey, Detroit, you want a team? Well, we've already got Sacramento, who's got this, and they're going to pay this. Like, you need to have a soccer-specific stadium. If MLS is happy to have the crew move from Columbus because it doesn't have enough money in that media market, then, you know, who's to say that Sacramento is like the ideal market? You say it's the 20th largest market, but, you know, still, I think, compared to some of these other names on the list, like Detroit or other major metropolitan areas, you got to think MLS sees that as a drawback about Sacramento.
Yeah, those are fair points. I would say that Sacramento has much more of a soccer culture than Detroit. Mm-hmm. I think from a purely soccer standpoint, Sacramento would be much better than Detroit. But no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
That point about leverage terrifies me.
No, and then that's actually, and it may sound like I'm being a conspiracy theorist, but literally, like, the same thing happens in other sports where, particularly, it's strange in minor league baseball. The Atlanta Braves are sort of famous for this, where they'll be like, hey, we've got our AAA team there right now. They're in Gwinnett or whatever, but their lease is running out, and they just basically tell the city of Gwinnett, like, hey, we'll move. I actually can't remember if Gwinnett is where the AAA team is, but I think it is Gwinnett Braves. Anyway, but they tell the city of Gwinnett, like, hey, we're going to move our team unless you re-up the stadium. And in the meantime, they go around to other cities and they say, hey, we're going to have a team on the market in the next year or so, put together a funding plan. And they basically make other teams compete for them. They don't show any loyalty to a specific area. And then they just wait for whichever team has the best deal, which in the end ends up being whichever team is able to throw the most public financing at them. And so MLS may be doing something similar where they're happy to be having all of these different cities try to woo them. And they're using that as leverage to get the most public funding for stadiums and also the largest media markets, if possible.
Yeah. Well, moving on to another market that used to have the AAA affiliate for our beloved Milwaukee Brewers.
Yep.
Is Nashville. They have a stadium deal done. Their new USL team starts playing next season? This season? I should know. They're owners are incredibly wealthy, and there's a groundswell of support in Nashville. And they have an MLS-level deal for their shirt sponsor worth $5 million. So wow. I would love to see a team in Nashville, but...
Yeah, it's interesting. Nashville's one of those teams. They obviously have the Nashville Predators, NHL, as well as...
Really well supported.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder if, like, MLS is thinking about that. Granted, I just, you know, like, poo-pooed Sacramento, but... these kind of like New South cities that have flourished with the NHL, these cities that have grown a lot population-wise, money-wise in the last like 20, 30 years, they may be sort of ripe for expansion teams. And that's probably – and I've heard that the Nashville deal is all but done with MLS. So that would be interesting.
Yeah, Nashville to me is like an Austin with better infrastructure yes. and a little bit more money. And I also think that because of the success of Atlanta, suddenly the southern market is realistic.
Yeah.
I think there were too many old adages about sports in the South that wouldn't succeed because of college football. And now what we're seeing with Atlanta United, it's changing the way people see the South as a market for sports.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, a city that's sort of on the cusp of the South is Cincinnati. I put these guys at most likely, and now because I have said that, I think they're probably the least likely, just because I am a negative human being. But Cincinnati made it to the U.S. Open Cup semifinals. Their average attendance in the USL is 21,000, which is great. City Council has already approved yes. funding for the stadium. The only drawback is that it's a pretty small market, and that is not appealing for the MLS.
Yeah, Cincinnati, I love watching games there. Yeah, the Cup games, also the U.S. women's team played a friendly match there recently. And again, you know, 20 to 30,000 fans in the stadium for That's friendly. Great. It was awesome. It's to me, it's bittersweet because you can't think about Cincinnati and soccer in Ohio without mm-hmm. thinking about the Crew. But, yeah, Cincinnati to me seems like they've just already built this huge fan base there. And the fans seem terrifically well organized. They've been actively involved with lobbying for funding and all that kind of stuff. The fans have. And so it seems like a prime market. And I would love to see more soccer played there. And I would love to see just seeing how much turnout there was for the U.S. women's team friendly there. I can't remember who that was against. I would love to see that. I'd love to see like more U.S. soccer games played in places like that rather than in New York, as yeah. strange as that sounds. But like you compare that to like the Costa Rica game where you feel like the crowd is kind of limp, put it in a market like Cincinnati where that has this huge, we're getting off topic here, but seeing like that U.S. women's game in Cincinnati where it has this just already this huge, well-organized fan base. They turn up big for the game. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It makes the experience of watching on TV so much better. And obviously must make playing the game there.
Yeah,
so
whenever
much
I watch
better.
Games at Soldier Field, there's a certain deadness to the stadium that really disturbs me as somebody who wants to see American soccer seen as like a viable powerhouse in CONCACAF. But yeah, that makes total sense yeah. to me. So where do you most want to watch a game between Detroit, Sacramento, Nashville, and Cincinnati? We have gone to a game together in Nashville before.
Nashville.
The ill-fated game that, I forget what year it was, that the U.S. got knocked out of the Olympics against Canada. Not a great day, but we saw the U.S. team out on Broadway, and I remember pointing Josie Altidore out to you and saying, that guy is really good. Little did I know how bittersweet my relationship with Josie would become.
Cincinnati to me just seems like got the best, most organized fans. Granted, I haven't seen much of Sacramento, but you make it sound like it's a very similar sort of fan base already there. But Cincinnati strikes me as just like the next big soccer market.
I think I'm going to go with Nashville just because I love Nashville. And I really, it sounds dumb, but the aesthetic of the team is so pleasing. And I think that is understated. The brand of Nashville is really strong. FC Cincinnati, that brand is not as strong.
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah. I love their like little lion logo. It's like angular. It's good. I think it's a lion. Maybe it's like something else. But it looks sort of like the Chrome Bag logo, but I like it.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I mean, I just want to see more games in Nashville. Maybe we can exercise the ghost of that one ill-fated game we saw there. Plus, shout out to the greatest coffee shop in the world, Crema Coffee.
Absolutely. Yes. Crema Coffee makes... I can't divorce anything I think about Cincinnati from, or excuse me, about Nashville from thinking about going and getting coffee there.
I know.
Totally legit.
That's all I want to talk about right now. We should just do it. already the official coffee of Soft Tattooed Millionaires until they tell us we can never say that again.
Yep.
All right. Moving on to MLS Cup semis. Not the most exciting games, I don't think. I was pretty tore up about the Crew versus Toronto.
The Crew versus Toronto felt a bit like, I hate to say it, but the US and TNT game, where it was just like one shot from the Crew could go in at any moment, but it also felt like desperate and it felt like it wasn't going to happen.
Yes. Yeah, from the kickoff, I felt nothing but the worst kind of destiny.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And it hurts so much to see Josie score that goal for some reason, because I feel the same frustration with him and Bradley as I do with, like, establishment Democrats. They refuse to acknowledge that the rules have changed. They don't fight hard enough for the country. And absolutely. Exactly. They don't realize that now this is a fight for survival, and they just want to be congratulated on being the best option.
Yeah, absolutely. And Josie's just doesn't give two shakes about this tax bill. I'm with you 100%.
I know.
I saw an article on ESPN FC where it was like, the phrasing pissed me off so much. It was about the game, and it said something like, Altidore finds redemption in...
What?
You know. Yeah, I was like, what the...
What redemption?
Yeah, what kind of redemption are you talking about?
I didn't know ESPN FC was capable of doling out redemption. I think of them as one of the least reputable voices on American soccer, except for I like Max Hecht and I love Shaka Hislop.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm 100% behind those guys. But
the articles are terrible, though.
Yeah, no need to say anything more about that.
Yeah, but sadly, the Crew get knocked out. I hated watching this.
Yeah, absolutely. And Seattle-Houston was probably even more hateable.
Yeah.
In some ways, in the sense that there was no tension to the game.
Yeah.
Coming in with the score from the previous match, and it was pretty flat as it was.
Yeah, Houston seemed dead. Whenever they got the ball, it seemed like they were waiting for the man in possession to create something. Watching the rest of the team, they were kind of at a standstill, especially for the first 30 minutes, this is what I was noticing. Nobody was moving into any sort of seams to receive any kind of pass. The back four in the first two Sounders goals were taking for granted that the players they were marking were offsides when they actually weren't.
It's okay. I was going to say that, as you said, the man in possession... Mm-hmm. I was struck with the fact that the man in possession just sounds like a Graham Greene novel.
That's great.
I would read the H out of that novel.
Our man in possession.
Yeah, waiting for the man in possession. Yeah.
The quiet absolutely. American is which U.S. men's national team member?
Well, I mean, it seems like Bradley's kind of the quiet American.
Yeah.
In a lot of
but that's one of my favorite novels. I don't want to ascribe him exactly. to anything that I enjoy.
You've got another all right, stop laughing, idiot.
Yeah,
you've got another interview lined up for us with an interesting guest.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
Yeah, Tom Payne is the outgoing president of Puerto Rico FC. So when I found out that he was leaving, I reached out to see if he would want to come on and talk about why it was the right time for him to leave Puerto Rico and sort of just give us a little bit of the history of PRFC in the last year with Irma and Maria. I love talking to him. He was a really nice guy, really fascinating. I think anybody who's interested in soccer or interested at all in the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico is going to enjoy his story of how he got the team out of Puerto Rico, how he set up his home base in Orlando. I don't know. I love talking to him. He was a really nice guy. I hope that whatever he does next, now that he's gone from PRFC, he continues to have an influence on the game in America because he's a good soccer mind.
Let's take a listen.
Yeah.
Tom Payne is no stranger to success. He began working in the MLS in 1998, eventually finding home with the LA Galaxy. During his time as the president of business operations, Galaxy won multiple MLS Cups. They also became the first club to turn a profitable season in the MLS, showing that America could indeed operate a viable league. In October of 2015, Tom decided to take a risk and become the first president of Puerto Rico FC. After 2 years of running the club, he has decided to step down. And so my first question for you, Tom, is why is this the right time for you to step away from PRFC?
Well, I think I've kind of done what I set out to do, which was build the entire organization from scratch, build the most professional sports organization really ever in Puerto Rico, and set us apart from that perspective, you know, try and create something that the people of Puerto Rico can be really proud of, especially during a very much a downtime, economically and a lot of other ways, even prior to the storms. And that extent, I think I've kind of done my job. You know, also pragmatically, it was my contract was up soon, and with some of the concerns going around related to the league, certainly that played a little bit of a role as well.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the concerns relating to the NASL. They recently lost their lawsuit against the Soccer Federation. They are now going to be classified as a Division III professional league. Do you think that the NASL can operate as a Division III?
Well, I mean, the league is actually appealing currently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're still hopeful that they'll regain the Division II status. And I believe that the court hearing is in a couple weeks in mid-December. So they'll know at that time whether they're still Division II or whether they're being classified as Division III. I honestly don't know what happens if they don't get the Division II status, because there's a team or two that have come out publicly going back a year now saying they'll only be involved if it's Division II. So I really don't know where that'll leave. Obviously, I want the best, and I'm hoping they're successful, because I believe that obviously the league is a positive and we want to try and keep it going. But, you know, most importantly for me is I want PRFC to be able to keep going. For us, I don't think the classification of the league matters as much. You know, we're still going to be playing teams in the U.S. We'd still be playing quality organizations in quality cities. So, you know, for Puerto Rico, I don't think the classification D2 versus D3 matters very much. But there's in our league that certainly feel the other way about that, and I understand as well.
Yeah, in a system that doesn't have promotion relegation, to be a Division II or to be the third division doesn't seem to be nearly as important. So you can still play great soccer. But let's get back to...
The USL's proven that for years until, you know, this is the first year they've been Division II in quite a while, the USL. And there's good quality soccer coming out of there. So I wouldn't have been against the Division III scenario, you know, but there's a couple teams that are, and that poses a problem, obviously.
Yeah, and then you see what happened with the San Francisco Deltas, which is incredibly sad that in their first year of existence, days after winning the final, they have to announce that they're going under. How do you see American soccer being able to avoid situations like that going forward, where we have these talented teams that aren't in the MLS or maybe are at the bottom of the USL? How do we help these teams keep folding?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to come in advance. I mean, are we vetting the owners? Are the owners? What's the point of allowing owners in to a league and then allowing them out in 1 year? You know, certainly vetting the owners and ensuring that they're in this for the long haul, that's a big part of it. Having a league that's strong enough to vet the business plans, and not only strong enough, but have the knowledge enough to vet the business plans and to ensure that the teams are doing the right things in order to have some success. And success is relative, obviously. I mean, I think every team probably loses money still. You know, and that shouldn't be something that's hidden. That should be something that every new owner understands, that for the first X amount of years, you're likely to lose money while you're trying to build a viable sports franchise. I mean, owners that get involved in pro sports at higher levels, they don't do it for the year-over-year turnover ever, unless it's the NFL. And the NFL doesn't have any changeover in owners. They do it for franchise value purposes. You know, in the NBA, every team loses money except for four or five. So, but teams are being sold for $2 billion. So, yeah. I think there has to be some reality here when new owners are talking. And I always get concerned when I feel like a league is scrambling to find teams to meet some quota or criteria, because to me, it certainly sends down a bit of an alarm that maybe they're not being vetted the way they should be, and we're just bringing a team in because we need to do it to fulfill some sort of a quota. So I think a lot of the work has to come in advance, and it has to certainly come from a strong league environment that can help vet business. Listen, everything's not easy, and everything doesn't always work either. And, you know, we've had it really hard in Puerto Rico, but listen, the economy in Puerto Rico is 2 or 3 times worse than any economy in the United States. And it's a non-soccer island. But we ended up, you know, really losing less money than almost any team in the league, probably. So, there are ways to do it to minimize the exposure. There are also ways to sort of maximize revenue. And in the case of San Francisco, I honestly don't think they went about it the right way. And I don't know them that well, but I do know that they had basically no salespeople as the season was starting on sponsorship or ticket sales. And I would wonder how it's possible to build a successful franchise. And I wonder why that was even allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, I mean, from the outside, it's hard to understand how a soccer team that plays that level of quality is unsuccessful in the Bay Area. The Bay Area has so much of the necessary ingredients to make that work, and to see them fold.
I don't know enough about their specifics. Like, yeah. I don't know enough about the market. You know, maybe they would have been better off being outside of downtown San Francisco, because there's a hell of a lot of youth soccer being played out in the suburbs, for example. I don't know all those answers at all, but, you know, obviously it didn't work out the way they wanted. Maybe they had a shift also in ownership, and maybe their exposure changed the way they felt about it. But I don't know all those particulars. But again, I think it's pretty bad that a team comes in and is out within a year. I mean, listen, the rumors of them being out were within 4 months of them starting. So, I don't see how that's ever good for a league, but I also don't think we should pick on the NASL, because these things also happen at other levels too. Even in MLS, teams have gone south. So I don't think the answer is, it's never a perfect scenario, but certainly we should be trying to manage and ensure that we have proper ownership groups with deep enough pockets to take losses, deep enough true interest to want to do this for a long term. And not be doing it because it's a hobby or some short-term reason, or the son plays soccer, or, you know, yeah. It needs to be a business model built. And that's what the whole thing should be built around.
So do you have a passion for soccer? You must. You worked with the LA Galaxy. You were starting the MLS in 1998.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what team do you support apart from PRFC, apart from the Galaxy? What started your interest in soccer?
I played a long, long time ago. I played in college. I, you know, like to think that if there was any kind of a pro league at that time, I would have maybe had an opportunity. I was a good player. Mm-hmm. But I was just a sports person. I was an athlete. I mean, I like baseball as much as I like soccer, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. And I still do. I still love the nuance of baseball. I love, you know, the fact that hitting a baseball is harder to do than anything in any sport, in my opinion. But I love soccer and the movement and the fact that it's a huge field, and it's open to creativity, a huge field with a round ball, and it can't really be overcoached and some of those things. So I'm incredibly passionate about it, and I'm just as passionate about the business of soccer, which I've played a major role in now for 20 something years, you know, and so I only want it to succeed, you know, and as long as I can continue to have a role whereby I have an opinion and maybe people might give it some credence, you know, that's important to me.
Yeah. So what is next for you after leaving Puerto Rico? In an ideal situation, where would you find yourself?
Well, I mean, I literally just landed in Charlotte yesterday. I'm using this as my home base. Next week I'll start reaching out to colleagues, clients. I've had a few organizations reach out to me, you know, in MLS and other. I had a Major League Baseball team reach out to me not too long ago. But, you know, it might take some time. It's the off season now, but it won't be for very long. And I'm still in the process of a move. I mean, my stuff won't even get here for a month. So it's not perfect timing or anything. Yeah. But listen, I'd love to stay involved in the game. I'd love to stay involved in the business and sport of soccer. Like I said, I've played a pretty major role in the growth of it, all the way from my days at Disney, where, you know, I helped build probably the most important youth soccer tournament in the country, at least for kids. You know, that's kind of where I started and built my reputation, and then obviously got recruited out to the Galaxy and went from there, right? But I think I was pretty successful in Puerto Rico against all odds, to be real honest. Very difficult league situation. I mean, this is our second off season and the second one where we've had to worry about whether there'll be a league tomorrow. That's really not a great mechanism to help build a franchise and build, support from a local fan base or from a local corporate base. You know, that's not the way you want to go about it. But, you know, the club hangs in there and the owners hang in there, and I give them credit for sticking in during the hurricane when we continued to play every game, and we played on the road and we traveled all over the United States, and, you know, they didn't really have to do that. So, yeah, my goal is to continue to stay in the game, and hopefully I'll land where I have an influence with a club and or league, and can help keep this thing going and continue to build.
Now that you have your home base in Charlotte, your things won't arrive for another month. I'm sure you're looking back on your time at Puerto Rico FC. You talked a little bit about the success you had on the island. What is the thing you're most proud of for PRFC? What is the success that you keep returning to in your mind?
Yeah, well, listen, we had a lot of things that need to get a lot better. I mean, when I say success, it's relative. It's not like we had, like, amazing attendance or things like that. But I think the thing that stands out the most is that, first of all, it's completely not a soccer market. It's a baseball, boxing, volleyball place. Now more kids are playing now than when I took the Galaxy there 10 years ago. But the truth of it is, the largest youth soccer club there would be the smallest one in Austin, Texas, or Southern California, or, yeah. There's a couple thousand kids playing soccer there. It's not like there's 50,000 in the local area. So the fact that we were able to build a pretty stable, really, really professional organization and front office during the worst economic situation ever on the island, through the most devastating hurricane ever, really, but certainly in Puerto Rico. The fact that we've been able to build something that can stand and continue to grow and be built upon, you know, as long as the owners and the league continue to move forward, then, you know, that's something I'm proud of, because I always looked at it as a significant challenge. That's really why I took the job. I always wanted to build something from scratch. But on top of that, you know, I got to know the people in Puerto Rico, and I got to know their spirit and their passion for life, really. And I believe they need something positive, something to really look forward to and something to look up to. And having a really professional, well-thought-of, well-respected organization playing in an American league, playing in places like New York and Miami and Raleigh, North Carolina, et cetera, that's a real positive, and that's something that I'll look back on fondly for sure.
Yeah, when I look back on this last season for PRFC, I'm amazed at the fact that you guys did not miss a game from Hurricane Maria. It is a shame to see that you guys were tied for first before Maria, and then the hurricane hits. You have to play your home games on the road. I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Can you just real quick tell me what was the mood like at the club after Maria, before Maria? I can't imagine what it was like to be there.
Oh, it was really hard. I mean, you got to remember that all the players except the three are not from Puerto Rico. So you've got people like myself included on an island. And this amazing storm comes through, and I had gotten off the island, which is very lucky, because we never would have been able to continue to play those games if I hadn't gotten off and been able to orchestrate everything and talk to everybody and deal with the league and deal with all the other teams, et cetera. But listen, I mean, it was hard. You couldn't get gas. You had to wait 8 hours for a gallon of gas and 5 hours to get $100 of your own money out of the bank. And very, very scary. Listen, Jack, when I left 2 days ago, I still didn't have power. Oof. And I literally live in the best area in Puerto Rico. I live in like the New York City part of San Juan, mm-hmm. a place called Condado. I've never got power again. So your day ends up ending at 5:30 because it goes dark at 6 o'clock. And so it's very tough. The team couldn't train. I mean, don't forget we had Irma before that.
Yeah.
And Irma was 2 weeks before that and we lost power for 5 or 6 days. So the team, you know, really starting in early September really stopped having any opportunity to train regularly. So listen, one of my favorite moments of my whole 2 years was when I got to see the whole team again in New York after Hurricane Maria, when I finally was able to get everyone off the island, which was unbelievably hard work and tedious and, you know, hundreds of flights getting canceled every day and players being bumped from this flight to the next. And literally we were getting players off one at a time. We flew to New York and used that as our center, because we were playing the Cosmos next. And, you know, just the fact that we went out there and played that game, I think showed a lot about the spirit of Puerto Rico and how important it was for us to play for the flag and for the people of Puerto Rico and really what we tried to do. And certainly it was hard, but we were trying to bring awareness to the situation as well and raise some money through each game. And we really have to thank all of our partner teams in the NESL who were really accommodating, very helpful, and made donations and generated support. All of that, you know, was really important to us. From a team perspective, you know, finally I decided we need to have a home base. So we made, my background was in Orlando, so it made a lot of sense to base ourselves there because they have a great airport, and I knew, you know, they had tons of soccer fields, and I knew I could work something out where we could have a place to train every day. And then we put the players in these big houses and so they could live a little more normally as opposed to in a hotel. So, I mean, the team was gone for 6 weeks or 6 weeks plus straight, and we played 9 games, including 5 home games all on the road. So, yeah, I was proud of the group for getting through that. You know, honestly, after the first couple games, I started getting real serious about it again, as if we need to be winning these games, not losing. You know, and that the excuses have passed. But at the same time, you know, it was a pretty unique situation and very difficult. And in the end, I think we handled it very, very well as an organization. We won 2 of our last 3 games. So yeah, I'm proud of the guys for that as well.
Yeah, well, I wish Puerto Rico FC all the success in the future. And for whatever comes your way next, I'm sure that you'll be more than capable after dealing with Irma and Maria and rebuilding a soccer team.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I got some new experiences. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, everything after this is a cakewalk.
Yeah. No, it was literally a great experience, and it was a real challenge for me, honestly. And before the storms and everything, it's a different way of life. Very different. A guy like me, I'm, you know, from New York and lived in LA a long time. And, you know, we all have our creature comforts and we're kind of spoiled in a lot of ways. And that part of it was never easy for me, not being able to go get the USA Today or the New York Post or New York Times and all of that. But the people there are really great, and have a great spirit. And I'd really love for what we've been able to start down there. I'd really love for it to go on and for the club to be able to grow incrementally every year and become a long-term, you know, professional sports team in Puerto Rico, because the people are really proud of it. And if the team did better on the field and we won some important games and things, I think you'd see a real spike in attendance as well.
Well, let's hope that happens. I feel like it's within the immediate grasp of Puerto Rico FC after seeing their results for the first half of the season. All right, Tom, I appreciate you coming on the show today. It was fascinating.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you for the time.
Yeah.
Now let's quick talk about the Twitter poll that we put out before Thanksgiving about whose rants were you most thankful for in the last year. Alexi Lawless, Taylor Twellman, and Jermaine Jones. Jermaine Jones wins this.
Jermaine Jones by far.
Yeah, 66% of the vote. No votes for Alexi Lawless.
Anyone whose Twitter rant involves calling out another player getting a dog with his girlfriend, huge. Huge. Jermaine Jones coming through in the clutch.
Yeah, Jermaine Jones now inhabits that strange sphere of celebrity in which I would love to meet him, but also I would be so scared.
He would, yeah, he would emasculate me, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to say the graphic thoughts I had in my mind. So let's move on to some emails we got about the soccer player you first fell in love with for no good reason. This one comes from Lee Barnwell. It's nice, short and sweet. All it says is, "My player, James Milner. My bad reason, the mustache he rocked when he played for Leeds." In parentheses, look it up. Smiley face emoji. And that comes from Lee Barnwell, footy fan, MCFC supporter. So I did look it up. It's on the Twitter page. It is bad.
It is really bad.
How would you describe it?
Caterpillar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also the same exact shape as one of those fake mustaches that you get out of a packet. Not that I'm buying them all the time, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely. It's ill-fitting. Like, literally, it does not fit on his face completely.
Yeah, he's still very young in this picture, too, so he's got a bunch of kind of like acne scars as well. Because James Milner is a pretty handsome guy, but he looks...
He grew into his face, yeah. There's also a gap between the top of the mustache and the nose that's substantial.
Yeah, yeah. No.
He almost looks like the muscle in like a 1950s British mob.
I don't quite follow that logic where if you can see somebody's philtrum, but just a tease of it, suddenly they become a strong man. But I understand. I understand what you mean. I was gonna say he looks like a bad stereotyped NASCAR fan if you take that Leeds jersey off, or if you just put like a giant M&M's patch on that Leeds jersey.
Also, he looks like, this doesn't make sense, but somehow his mustache makes it look like he gave himself his own haircut.
he looks like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber.
Yes, definitely.
But like with a mustache. That's so weird. That's great. Well, thank you, Lee. That is that's good. The other email we have is from Italy. Mm. Says, "Hello, I'm Alessio from Italy, and I'm sending this email regarding your podcast. I'm an Internazionale supporter. The player that I loved when I was a kid is Ronaldo, the phenomenon." Come on, Alessio, this is not for no good reason. At the time, he played for Inter, and he was a monster, capitalized. His dribbling skills were amazing. During the 90s, the Italian Campionato had all the strongest players from all over the world playing there. Ronaldo was so good, no one could stop him. Alessio, I'm not interested in this email. Sorry. If you would have said I love Ronaldo because he's probably a closeted sex addict and coke fiend, I would have been more interested.
Yeah, I'm interested in that, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Like if someone said, "Oh, I love Maradona because he is quite possibly the scum of the earth." Yeah, you got it.
All right, Alessio, nice try. Try again.
Yeah.
We need a complicated love on this podcast.
Yeah, loving Ronaldo in his heyday for Inter in Brazil is not... this is no good reason. Those are two great reasons.
Yeah.
Let's have some final thoughts before we sign off.
Real quick, follow-up from last week. Soft Tattoos. I sent you a link here that has...
Wales Online.
Yeah, Wales Online, you know, which in my mind is the authority on awkward tattoos. So this is a current Huddersfield Town player, Scott Malone, who has on his left hand a tattoo of Marilyn Monroe's face.
Dude, you just know he is left-handed, if you know what I mean.
That's gross, bro. Also, like, I mean, is it the kind of thing that is so soft it's hard? Like, where it's like,
yeah, celebrity portraits can be hard. Like if you see like a tough looking guy tatted up and then he's got like this tattoo of, I don't know, like Peter Lorre on his on his chest, I would be terrified. But this guy looks like a goon.
I mean, he's kind of a goon on the field. So I don't know. It seems to me it's a weird point where it just crosses into the other realm, where it is both, it's obviously so soft, it's very, you know, sensual tattoo of Marilyn Monroe, but it seems so weirdly out of character that you just know Malone has effed some guys up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if I'm terrified of him or if I just think that he's a pervert now.
Yeah, good. But that is exactly That is,
I mean, perverts can be terrifying.
Exactly. That is a thought you have right before you get your ass kicked.
Yeah, and then afterwards you're like, I just got my ass kicked by a guy who has Marilyn Monroe tattooed on his left hand.
Yep.
I also love the caption for this photo is just Scott Malone shows off his tattoo. Nice caption work. Solid
work. Welsh intern. Nice job.
All right. What are your final thoughts for this week?
Final thoughts for this week. Not much. I mean, pleased to see Danny Williams, solid contributor in the Premier League. You know, another one of those guys who just is a depth option for the U.S. men's national team, and we need some of those. So nice work for Danny.
Yeah. My final thought is that I just want to make a case for the vacant Portland spot. I think Mark Dos Santos should be considered. The Timbers GM, Gavin Wilkinson, told reporters on a conference call this week that his ideal candidate for the Timbers head coaching role is a progressive coach that's bilingual, and they prefer a coach who has managed in other countries. So Mark Dos Santos was the head coach of the San Francisco Deltas, one of the saddest stories in soccer this year. They came into existence at the beginning of the season, won the NASL, and now they're shut down due to financial reasons. So it would be a shame if Mark Dos Santos is not given another chance, especially to manage at a higher level. He's progressive. He speaks four languages. He's managed in foreign countries. He's won both the USL and the NASL. In Brazil, he ran the youth academy for Palmeiras, where they won the U15 championship. He also worked at both Chelsea and Porto when he's working on his coaching badges. So I think he would be a great fit for Portland.
Yeah, reading his resume sounds a bit like when Raj does an introduction for someone's interview on Men in Blazers. He's got a lot of
classic journeyman.
Yeah, high plaudits, definitely classic journeyman. And you said he's also potentially already been getting some offers, but maybe not the MLS.
Yeah, so that's according to his own Twitter. So I trust that source.
Well, Godspeed Dos Santos.
Yeah. I think he'd be great anywhere. So just get that man a job in the MLS.
Yeah, maybe if Osorio gets bounced, he can take over for El Tri, and then there can be so many Dos Santoses. There could be Trey Santos, and they can start a rumor that he is their father.
A French Canadian with Portuguese citizenship. Yeah, why not? And also just gotta shout out that Quebecois love, because our grandma is from Montreal.
Definitely. All right, Trey McAfee, my brother.
All right.
A bientôt. Thanks for listening to this week's Soft Tattooed Millionaires. We'll keep everybody updated on any developments with marginal U.S. men's national team players and their tattoos. Also, yeah. Danny Williams, solid tattoo work. Check it out sometime.
I will.